One of the things Beth said about me early on is like, you always show up as 100% who you are. Because I don't really have another choice. I was the redheaded girl with glasses growing up. Like, I couldn't blend in. It was not available to me.
I felt that it was important to hold my difference, but I held it really uncomfortably because I think in addition to, it was just a massive difference of opinion in a very high stakes election, it also felt kind of personal to Sarah.
Hey, it's Julie. Welcome to Uncomfy, a show about sticking with moments that challenge us. You know, every single day I get some tough feedback or hear a perspective I disagree with or just find myself outside my comfort zone. And the natural reaction is to fight or flee, right? But if we bail out or lash out right away in those situations, we might miss a chance to learn something or feel new empathy or deepen a relationship. So the question is how to stick with it in those moments, right? Well, that's what this podcast is about. Real people telling real stories of choosing to stay open and curious in challenging moments. I'm glad you're here. Now, let's get uncomfy. How can a friendship survive a deep disagreement about politics? Sarah Stewart Holland and Beth Silvers are hosts of the popular podcast Pantsuit Politics. A couple of times a week, they're right there on the podcast talking about what's in the news and what's on their minds. They've also written a couple of books together, most recently, Now What? How to Move Forward When We Are Divided About Basically Everything. I am a big Pantsuit Politics podcast listener, so this is a really exciting opportunity for me. Sarah and Beth, welcome. Thanks so much for taking time today.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, thank you. That's such a generous introduction. We appreciate it.
Well, your friendship is really at the heart of the podcast, and longtime listeners will know that you weren't close friends when you started this process 10 years ago. And you are very different, which is part of the magic sauce, right, of the podcast. So if I could ask each of you to point out a difference that you admire, but maybe it also kind of drives you nuts sometimes. Beth, would you start?
Sure. Sarah is really comfortable with spontaneity. If something hits in the news and we haven't had time to prepare for it, she is comfortable just sitting down, winging it, processing in real time, reacting quickly. I am a very slow processor, and I also like to prepare in a really thorough way. And I admire this so much in Sarah because something I struggle with in my own life is just knowing when I'm finished. I can prepare forever. I have adopted a habit that drove me crazy in an old boss. He used to say, we never finish, we just run out of time. And I hated that about him. And now that's me. I never finish, I just run out of time. So it's a really good balance for me that Sarah's like, no, let's just go. Like, it's time to record. This is important. Let's just do it. Let's trust ourselves. I think it's helped me learn to trust myself a little bit more. And then it often makes me really uncomfortable. And I find myself just like pulling my hair out. This is not what I prepared for. This is not how I thought I was going to approach this today. I'm not going to contribute any value here because I'm not ready. So it's both wonderful and it has that tension around it a lot.
Thanks for sharing that. Sarah, what's something about Beth?
I mean, it's probably what the flip side of what Beth just articulated. Because she is such a careful processor, a lot of her processing, I think, is internal. Even though, I mean, a massive amount of it, obviously, is what we do together. I am mostly an external processor. If I think it, I'm going to say it. You know, one of the things Beth said about me early on is like, you always show up as 100% who you are. Because I don't really have another choice. I was the redheaded girl with glasses growing up. Like, I couldn't blend in. It was not available to me. And so with Beth, the way that she will internalize and internally process and be so careful, like I have to watch it that I don't interpret that as like criticism or frustration with me because it's so hard. You don't know what, especially across a Zoom lens, you know, it's so hard to know what the other person is thinking or where they're at or what's going on in their lives. You know, the longer we do this and the bigger our team gets and, you know, particularly like during COVID when we couldn't travel together and be in person because we do not live in the same town, that tension will strain because we don't have that in-person feedback or those sort of like bonding experiences. And it's tough. It's tough when you process so differently and you're trying to interpret that processing across the internet.
Yeah. Sarah, as I understand it, you were kind of the instigator of this, like, let's do a podcast. Is that right? Or was it
Well, I mean, it was mostly my husband who kept harassing me to start a podcast because I think he saw the he's been living that external processing way longer than Beth. Let's just put it that way.
He's like, you need somebody else.
Yeah,
to process.
No, he just knew. Well, I had been blogging, and I think he just saw that this was a unique fit for my interest and skills, and that I wanted to like kind of get back in the political arena a little bit.
Because you had worked on political campaigns.
Yes, I'd lived in Washington, D.C. and worked on presidential campaigns and worked in the United States Senate. And so Beth had reached out to guest post on my blog at the time while she was on maternity leave. And a couple posts she wrote kind of sparked the idea of, well, what if we did this? We see things separately. In particular, we had both written two different perspectives on the Syrian civil war. Which that's, still in the news 10 years later. But we had both written about it on my blog. And I thought, well, we see things differently. What if we did a podcast together where we could kind of play off our differences?
Yeah. I mean, it really is. And that's, I think, part of what's been the staying power of this and that people keep coming back for is that there is difference. So often, you know, podcasts are like, oh, here's my friend. And we both see eye to eye on a lot of things. And so it's refreshing to hear disagreement. And sometimes you do see eye to eye. But I'd love to hear a story of a time when you had to navigate an uncomfortable difference and kind of how you did that without turning into, you know, the fight or flee or freeze response that really is so common. Beth, would you kick it off?
Sure. I think the hardest conversations we have, knowing that we intend to have hard conversations, the hardest ones that we have center around candidates. Sarah and I are really good at working through issues because there's lots of space in an issue. Even if we sort of disagree on a particular policy proposal, we will find commonality somewhere, whether we're talking about healthcare or tax policy or environmental policy. We can always go somewhere where we're like, ah, well, there is the uniting thread for us. And then that helps us usually work our way back around to the policy to say, well, here's the part of it that we both like, and here's what I would do differently or you would do differently. But when we're talking about candidates, it's a forced choice. And the hardest one for us has been Hillary Clinton's candidacy. She ran for president early in the life of our podcast. It was our first presidential election. And I was more of a Republican at the time than I am now, certainly. And I was uncomfortable voting for Hillary Clinton for a number of reasons at that time. And Sarah had worked for Hillary Clinton's campaign and personally admires her so greatly. And I think that I felt that it was important to hold my difference because I do think that that's part of why people listen to the podcast. I don't do that artificially, but I also want to make sure that I am not giving in artificially either, that I'm not just listening to Sarah and going, well, Sarah says this, so I'm persuaded. That wouldn't be an interesting show to listen to either. Mm-hmm. And it's not the kind of thinker or person I want to be in the world. So I held that difference, but I held it really uncomfortably. Because I think in addition to it was just a massive difference of opinion in a very high stakes election, it also felt kind of personal to Sarah because she has such a personal connection to Hillary. Like I was disregarding her perspective and her experience. She had more knowledge than the general public of Hillary Clinton. And so I think that tension just felt very present to both of us throughout that entire campaign.
Sarah, what did it feel like to you?
Well, I think it's so interesting. For one thing, when you talk about presidential candidates, it is personal to everyone and the way they see the person, and the person is such a prism through which, you know, we see everything's too much for somebody to hold, right? Because they are just a human being. And it's also about the two-party system. And then it becomes a debate about, you know, third-party candidates and what's the utility of voting for third-party candidates and what does that mean? And it becomes a, you know, lesser of two evils debate. It still bubbles up, you know, like when we were talking during this electoral season, Beth was much more sort of emotionally connected to Kamala Harris than I was. And at one point I said, it's so interesting because what you articulate about Kamala Harris is not that different what people articulated about Hillary Clinton. In fact, I think personality-wise, Beth is probably closer to Hillary Clinton than I am, you know, and Kamala Harris. And, like, I brought that up, and she was like, well, I don't want to get into Hillary again, you know? So it's like, it's just you know, especially with female candidates, right? It's really more about just the person. Because it's not just men who react to female candidates, especially in presidential races. And we've only had really, what, two major party candidates that were female. I think it's holding so much about how we think about power, how we think about ourselves. You know, we both, me with Hillary and Beth with Kamala, were articulating our own feelings and experiences about being a woman in a position of power and how people react to you and how people interpret either your careful processing or your thoughtful answers or, you know, whatever it is, right? Like it's all this filtration device that we have to sort of remember is about us as much as it is about the candidate.
But how did, given that it was as much about you as it was about the candidate, and if we go back to this particular moment, I mean, it was personal on some level, just like Beth was saying, she was worried about, like, that, it, you know, how are we going to navigate this? Because I know how much this means to Sarah. So on your side, how were you able to kind of, you know, not get angry or not take it personally, right? Or drive a wedge in your relationship?
I mean, I have been a person obsessed with politics since high school. So my experiences with people I love holding different political views than me is wide and deep. My husband, who I have, you know, been in love with since I was 19 years old, like one of our big first conflicts was he was in favor of the Iraq war and I was not. And we were college students and political science majors, so we fought about it all the time. And I don't know if it's a quirk of my personality. I don't know if it's just my experience with being an overtly political person. But I can feel very strongly in disagreement with you up to the point that I think your stance is unethical and I just do not connect it to the person. Like I can be mad. I will articulate vehement disagreement, but I don't remember in 2015 or 2016 ever feeling mad at Beth. I knew that she didn't like Hillary Clinton. I knew I wasn't going to change her mind about that. I felt tension about the way we would sort of avoid that. I think I probably would have had a higher comfort level just sort of openly talking about that than she would have. But that's just because I have a lot of practice being a person whose politics are out on display for everybody and always have been. I think when I was young, I thought, well, man, if I cut out every person who disagrees with me, I'm going to be awful lonely. Like, was I not going to have any friends? You know, like, yeah. It just wasn't going to work.
But I think what you're describing is admirable. I wish I could imbibe a little bit more of that into my own way of being. And because I think we look around, and you write about it in your book, like we look around American society today and just a lot of us don't really have that skill very well honed. And so we are shrinking our, you know, our friendships and sort of like cutting people out. So, Beth, how did you approach that? Or what did you feel like you needed to make some changes in the way you talked about or even to avoid bringing up Hillary Clinton, you know, even over the years to like try to protect yourself? Or deal with how you felt you might feel if you were Sarah?
No, I don't. I don't love talking about it just because I feel like, what else is there to say? Hmm. We know where we are. It doesn't feel very interesting to me.
But
I honestly don't like.
You weren't avoiding it. You
no, I wasn't avoiding it, and I also wanted to, like I said, kind of hold my space around it and let Sarah hold her space around it, and just let that live. I mean, Sarah has that willingness to fight it out and not really be mad. I think the tool that I have in my arsenal is I am really comfortable just saying, okay, that's where you are and that's where I am. And it's less agree to disagree because I think that is avoidant and more I understand. And I learned some things about you from that position and I learned some things about myself from that position. But I think what worked in our relationship was the sense that, like, you're not going to change your mind, and that's fine. There are still a million things to discuss about this election that are really interesting. Let's discuss those. And that's kind of part of the secret sauce of doing the podcast for me. I want to stick with things where I feel like there's room to grow and shift and evolve instead of sort of rehashing things where I'm like, I get it. That's where you are. This is where I am. This is why. Great. Let's figure out where we can go from here.
Yeah. So what is the political discourse that you're hoping people pick up on, both from your books and from the way you model it on Pantsuit Politics? What are some of the key skills or concepts that Beth, go ahead and start the list, maybe, if you would.
I hope that people feel a sense of freedom to get out of those forced binaries by listening to us. We started the show, and in our initial discussions, we're talking about cable news. And I think a lot of podcasting has replicated the cable news formula, where people think there isn't real disagreement or there isn't real equality or representation of both sides, unless it is a fight to the death. You're pro-choice, I'm pro-life. We're just going to do that back and forth forever. You're for Clinton, I'm for Trump, whatever. I hope that Pantsuit Politics says, hey, sure, there are forced decisions to be made in the world, but that's not most of the world. Most of the world is figuring out what's even worth paying attention to, what's worth prioritizing, and how do I, a person who does not write legislation all day, every day, does not conduct high stakes negotiations on behalf of the United States, does not sit on the Supreme Court, how do I figure into all of this? And I hope by listening, people feel empowered to ask the kinds of questions of their friends and family that we ask each other to sort of get at some of those deeper ideas that our politics grow from, instead of believing that our politics can just be reduced to that sort of forced this or that all the time.
Well, we've been doing this for 10 years. And what I hope that we do and what I think we try to show people within our conversation is both articulating something that they'd been dancing around, sort of picking up the pieces. You know, we hear people say, like, you gave me the words that I, or you articulated what I was struggling with. So what I hope that we do and what we try to do is push the conversation a little bit further down the lane, right? To articulate what people are thinking, to put the pieces together. And really, what I hope is to reveal the possible. You know, I think after 10 years, I'm coming to feel a little bit of impatience with questions. I'm ready for some solutions. I'm ready for answers. I'm ready for people who are standing up and saying, I think there's a different way. And I hope that we do that too. I hope that we both give people a sense of being heard and seen and understood in the midst of the struggle, but also a sense of we're not alone. Like we used to say all the time on the podcast, we are the committee. Like it's a democracy. We're the committee. If we're not happy with the institution, if we're not happy with the policy, if we're not happy with the legislation, like it doesn't mean that we fix it immediately, but we can sure as heck take the ball and push it further down the court. And so what I hope we give people is a different way to participate. Like what we always say is we take a different approach to the news. We don't want people to leave anxious. We want people to feel empowered or even just a little bit better understood or a little bit smarter. Like they understand themselves a little bit of what's happening more than they did when they started the show. Because I think that builds over time, that compounds.
Beth, just finally, what's giving you hope in this political climate that we live in and that you're constantly thinking about and talking about on the show?
I think it's impossible to feel anything other than hope when you host a show like ours and you hear from so many people who are sticking with it and who are pivoting in their approach, but still trying. So we may hear from people, I can't do the national scene anymore, but I'm running for a school board. But I'm starting this nonprofit in my community, but I'm getting plugged in here. When we are out and get to meet listeners in person, rarely do they come up to me and say, you know, you really changed my mind about this issue. It's more like, you said this one thing about your kids or about what you do when you drive, and it stuck with me all these years, and I wanted to tell you that made such a big difference. So I just think being part of community in any form is hopeful. And it's impossible to feel discouraged when you're really plugged into community. And that's what I would say to people who are tempted to tune out because it gets to be too much. Find a place where you find a sense of community. Because once you do, then you'll be able to get through even the hardest days. It's hard to talk about Los Angeles being on fire, but I feel hopeful even in the midst of something like that, because I know I have all of these really thoughtful people to take it in with. And I think that if more of us could find that, we would be able to weather these difficult moments with a lot more grace and ease.
Beth Silvers and Sarah Stewart Holland are co-hosts of the Pantsuit Politics podcast. And their most recent book together is a great peek into their own stories, as well as the expertise that we all need right now as we try to stick with the uncomfortable conversations and lean into these really important aspects of living in a democracy. The book is called Now What? How to Move Forward When We Are Divided About Basically Everything. Sarah, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And Beth, it's just really been a treat. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Julie.
And thank you for getting uncomfy with us today. How are you navigating political disagreements in your own relationships? I would love to hear what is working for you. You can send an email to uncomfy@byu.edu or connect with us on social media. And in the meantime, be sure to check out my other podcast called Top of Mind. We tackle tough topics in a way that will challenge you and help you feel more empathy. And it's really a great way to practice this skill of sticking with discomfort in your everyday life. Just search for Top of Mind with Julie Rose on your favorite podcast app. Uncomfy is a BYU radio podcast. Samuel Benson produces it, and the team includes Enrique Prado, James Hoops, and Sam Payne. Our theme music was composed by Kelsey Ney. I'm Julie Rose. Can't wait to get uncomfy with you again next week. Hey there, friends. I want to take just a quick moment and dive into another gem of a podcast from the BYU Radio family. It's The Lisa Show, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. She's a comedian, an actress, a believer, and a single mom. And she was even our very first guest on Uncomfy, you may remember, talking about a really uncomfortable conversation with a close friend of hers. So what's The Lisa Show about? Well, it's kind of like sitting down to chat with your favorite people about what's going on in life, all of life's challenges. They tackle parenting, mental health, social issues, always with a lot of laughs, because it's Lisa. So if you are up for figuring out this crazy thing called life, give The Lisa Show a listen. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts.